Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Hey, it's Latif from Radiolab. Our goal with each episode is to make you think, how did I live this long and not know that? Radiolab. Adventures on the edge of what we think we know. Listen wherever you get podcasts.
I'm Andrea Bernstein, in for Brian Lehrer. In the 1980s, we started living large. Homes got larger, American bodies got larger, debt increased, and we sprawled out. We overleveraged, overspent, and overconsumed. And here we are. In New York City, our unemployment rate just jumped to over 8% and is rising. The government is frantically trying to chart a new course, and we're all wondering how it will all pan out and what kind of country we'll be in when it's over. Kurt Anderson, novelist and host of PRI's Studio 360, has written this week's cover story for Time magazine. It's called The End of Excess: Why This Crisis is Good for America. He joins me now to talk about the end of an era and the way forward. Thanks for joining us.
Happy to be here. Hi, Andrea.
So you say we have to adjust the way we think about ourselves and that we have to get in touch with our inner aunt. So what do you mean by that?
Well, I'm referring there to the old fable children's story of the grasshopper and the ant. You know, the grasshopper parties like the good times are never going to end, and the ant prudently, you know, puts together works and puts together his stores for the winter. And winter comes, and the grasshopper's in trouble. I use the metaphor to talk about these two sides of the American character, and I think we have both of those sides in almost a unique fashion as national characters go. The kind of imprudent, reckless, hell-bent, gambler, gold rusher, grasshopper, and then this, you know, the more the package of attributes that the founders, I guess, for instance, embodied of sort of practicality and prudence and discipline. And you know, as you look back at the United States since it's existed, we have, you know, we kind of veer back and forth between emphasizing one part of our character and then the other and then back to the other. And after a long period, more than a quarter century of sort of partying like there's no tomorrow, we are at a moment where we're all going to be sliding back to being that great prudent, you know, American ant, more the builder and sort of enterprise builder than the prospector and speculator.
So let me ask you something about that, because, you know, as I look back on the past two decades, I think, wow, I should have been more of a grasshopper. I mean, I am an ant. You know, my instinct is to not take on a lot of debt, to try and save, to try and, you know, do things prudently. My parents were children of the Depression. These were the values they inculcated in me. But, you know, my 401k dropped as much as anybody else. What limited investments I have dropped. And I sort of thought, well, you know, I could have enjoyed that money. So is there a sense in which it becomes sort of, on one case, it's a self-evident argument, but it's sort of like, you know, you're sort of dealing with this, wow, if I could have really been enjoying myself and I blew it.
Well, you know, you'll have to deal with your own conscience on that, Andrea. But, you know, and the good side is that I believe that the zeitgeist and the whole rest of the country are going to, you know, catch up with you for the next 10 or 20 years and be more ant-like. I think an example of that frustration and anger of that sense is this. Wait, well, I paid my mortgage. I didn't buy too big of a house. Why do I now have to bail out all these people who were reckless? You know, there is that. I also think, however, that if you look back in American history, the grasshopper side and the ant side are, we need them. One of the reasons for our success as a country, apart from our individual predispositions as ants or grasshoppers, is we have both of those sides. You know, we put the pedal to the metal, but we also, you know, build systematically and prudently. One side went on sort of as the ruling paradigm setting class and MO for longer almost than has ever been the case before. I mean, you look back at the 1920s, you know, and the period that preceded the Great Depression and the crash there, that was a dozen years of this kind of, you know, party time, bon ton roulé culture and expenditure and extravagance. This is, you know, this period that we've just been through is more than twice that. So if we get off without a Great Depression and have coming off a kind of roaring 80s that went on for 25 years, then I think we will have gotten off pretty lucky.
Now, you know, it's you talk about this sort of, you know, the spirit of excess kind of taking root during the Reagan era.
Yeah.
Which, is, you know, in some ways is counterintuitive. I mean, it's not sort of what you would think that Republicans would be promoting.
Right.
And yet that is sort of, you know, what happened. Morning in America, everything's
right.
Looking great.
I think part of the problem, and you see that, I mean, especially in the last 8 years, as, you know, intellectually honest Republicans came to see, wait a minute, we've lost our bearings. We're just spending. We're the people that we used to warn against. We used to be the green eye shade, disciplined, you know, party of grown-ups, and we let that go. And again, I think what happened in the largest sense to the Republicans and to all of us, but especially to the Republicans in this sense, is that after it kept on going, you know, and essentially despite the administrations of the Clinton administration, you know, this sort of quarter century of more or less Republican hegemony and the spirit of unfettered capitalism ruling the land, I think, you know, they did lose their bearings because they felt like, hey, this magical time, this enchanted moment where housing prices only go up will last forever. And, you know, since it lasted so long, certainly to people under 40, it felt like forever. So I think in the end, in that kind of dialectical way, if you will, the fact that this apparent and as we've now discovered, illusory in many ways winning streak sort of has in fact left the Republican Party in shambles as they moved so far away from their traditional, you know, kind of prudence about financial things.
But, I mean, to be fair, not everyone sort of was part of this party. I mean, there were, you know, people's wages were going down, people were working harder.
Yeah.
So what about those people who sort of feel like, wow, you know, I just kind of watched this whole thing happen and everybody else made money and I didn't, and now what?
As I say, I mean, what can one say to them? They are either going to be relieved that the world is reality based again and has crashed to earth, and out of that wreckage we can rebuild a more sensible system of economic regulation, a sense of fairness will return, all those things, and so as citizens of this chastened, rebuilding country, they can take pleasure in that. I have nothing to say to them about you know, the fact that they didn't take advantage of the kind of all bets are off party time quarter century. Nor did, you know, as you say, many of us. And each situation is different. I mean, even some of those, you know, who were working more than one job, whose incomes didn't go up the last 5 or 10 years, I think they're, and we can all feel prudent about our own cases and think, oh, we're not one of those people who you know, overdid things. But I think many of us, perhaps probably most of us, in some way or another, got into this kind of magical thinking sense that we could spend as much, borrow as much, eat as much, whatever, buy a house, a bigger house than we strictly needed. So I think in various ways, and I, you know, account for many, many of the ways in this piece in which the last 25 years played out, people were indeed buying into this general notion of kind of American exceptionalism carried to an extreme degree. I mean, many great things have happened in the last 25 years. I'm not saying it was, you know, all bad. I mean, and one of the cases I make is that, you know, we now have faced a sort of in our hungover state, like chastened drunks at the end of a long bender, the need to rebuild things. But,
Well, and you say that the hangover arrives just in time for the new Democratic president. You write, it's as if Jesus had returned, but just afterward extraterrestrials landed, and as a result, everybody stopped paying much attention to the holy dude.
Well, it's 6 months ago, right on the verge, the eve of this meltdown and this crash and this emergency, you know, we thought, those of us who were, looking forward to a potential Obama election, thought, oh my gosh, this is going to be a great new age, by which we meant mostly and mainly the election of an African American. Well, we got that, and then, but as we were getting that, this the rest of this stuff happened. And
right, good luck to him.
It just, it eclipsed this great moment of newness with this other big thing. So it is, which is not bad. I mean, Obama positioned himself as a guy who is, you know, smart and good and competent, but just happened to be black. Well, nothing could have made him seem just a guy who happened to be black than this enormous emergency that he's suddenly dealing with.
You were talking about how pop culture tried to warn us by reflecting American culture. You talk about Homer Simpson and sort of, yeah, you know, if you just looked at Homer Simpson, you could have figured it out. Or maybe WALL-E, which, you know, came out last summer, you know, sort of things were kind of beginning to devolve. But you know, obviously not when WALL-E began to be made. Do you think that there was this sort of sense in the zeitgeist that people kind of knew it wasn't going to last, that sort of produced these pop culture images?
I do. I absolutely do. I mean, in addition to the pop culture images, you know, I think the various forms of, you know, lesser or greater apocalypto pop culture in movies and in fiction of the last several years especially, I think come from a shared sense of, oh my gosh, we got to be heading over the falls. This thing can't last. And yet, you know, we, as we heard the sound of that waterfall, you know, arising ahead of us, you know, look at Detroit. I mean, Detroit has known for 25 years, and everyone has known for 25 years that Detroit was in big trouble in all kinds of ways. But until the last year or so, this sense of, uh-oh, we're really at the abyss, really didn't seem to take hold. And I think that's true of large swaths of the media, of all kinds of quintessentially 20th century businesses and late 20th century ways of thinking. We felt it in our gut, I think, and knew it in our heart of hearts, but like, maybe it'll go on, you know, as, you know, corrections and recessions came in 1990 and 2001 and 9/11 was supposed to change everything and then really didn't. I think we developed this sense of, well, you know, maybe we are in some, you know, new world where we can just keep floating higher and higher and houses will get more and more valuable and stock and 401ks will make us feel richer and richer.
On the other hand, you know, Slumdog Millionaire swept the Academy Awards, and it sort of, you know, was about someone in pretty dire circumstances winning a gamble. So maybe that's the sort of, you know, opposite of the 180 degrees from WALL-E and Homer Simpson.
With some versions of magic taking place in that. So yes, that's, right. But maybe that magic, the magical thinking, can now.
Well, there's the dialectic. We need to wrap it up there. Thanks very much. Kurt Anderson is, among many other things, a novelist, the host of PRI Studio 360, and the author of this week's Time magazine cover story. Thanks for joining me.
Thank you.
I'm Andrea Bernstein, in for Brian Lehrer. The Brian Lehrer Show's latest crowdsourcing project is all about your uncommon economic indicators. You've been posting your videos, photos, and stories. You've also been calling our special Uncommon Economic Indicators hotline at 1-800-543-2543. Here are a few recent highlights.
My daughter is about to graduate from a well-regarded private university. She is interviewing for jobs in Chicago and recently called to tell me that not only are companies doing first-round interviews on campus and then second-round interviews at offices, but they are now doing third-round interviews because they have so many candidates for every position.
I do a lot of home improvement projects around my house, and my uncommon economic indicator is how much service people are available in either Home Depot or Lowe's, and normally you couldn't get waited on if you had a heart attack, but now you can walk in and there's lots of cheerful people waiting to assist you and show you where things are and point out the values.
I'm a New York City taxi driver. This economy has made me think about going to school and then do something else. So I start my GED classes already because it's so bad that sometimes you can't even make ends meet. You can drive 12 hours and give the money to the garage.
Callers to our Uncommon Economic Indicators hotline to add your story, call 1-800-543-2543. That's 1-800-543-2543. And be sure to check out the Uncommon Economic Indicators homepage at WNYC.org. Click on The Brian Lehrer Show. Andrea Bernstein in for Brian Lehrer. Coming up next, how to stop wasting your time driving around and looking for parking.